It is Friday, and on a very special edition of Baseball Barbacast, we will be previewing the 2024 MLB Draft.
Yes, we got the draft. We got the Futures game coming up this weekend, all kinds of other All-Star festivities next week. But this episode is focused on the future, but also the present, as we reveal the top-selling jerseys so far in the 2024 season, and of course, the good, the bad, the ugly. It's Friday. It's Baseball Barbacast.
I would rather do the worst-selling jerseys. That's funnier. Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world that knows that Paul Skenes should start the All-Star game at catcher. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman.
Listen, my one question about Paul Skenes' past as a catcher, how did he have gear that possibly fit? But fortunately, he doesn't have to worry about that anymore. We will, of course, be mentioning at least briefly what Paul Skenes did yesterday in Milwaukee. But we are going to spend a good chunk of today's episode. First of all, hi, Jake. You're in the same room as me, so that's cool. Yeah. If you're watching on YouTube, you can see we are in a lovely studio here in Fort Worth, Texas. We have arrived for the All-Star Week, but I think the timing here is important because while, you know, a lot of people cover the game, okay, we show up Sunday night, show up Monday night. No. Saturday and Sunday is when we really have our fun, and that is the Futures game, which we will talk about, and the draft, which we will preview in the first half of this show. So we are already here in Texas. We are recording podcasts in the same place, which is always a delight. And yeah, we got a good little show coming up for you guys.
So the decision to move the draft to All-Star, I think, has both brought more eyeballs to it while making it more difficult to prepare for it from like a media side of things, because the people who cover the draft obviously are doing the draft, right? Yep. Draft writers are doing the draft. But I think for me personally, having it right before All-Star, it kind of gets swallowed up a little bit just between, you know, All-Star voting and the Home Run Derby. And there's just so much going on that it's easy to forget about the draft. But we will not forget about the draft because we love the draft. You in particular are obsessed with the draft. Mm-hmm. And we want to give people a sense for a brief overview how the draft actually works very, very quickly. Talk about the best players in this year's draft. Talk about some of the biggest storylines in this year's draft. Mm-hmm. So, Jordan, let me start with a pretty simple question. Why do you love this so much? Why do you spend so much free time focused on things that never become content?
Well, right.
Rarely.
I mean, it's I wouldn't say rarely. I think it's just the unpredictable nature of it. I think it's just getting involved and interested in amateur baseball as a whole, whether it is college. And we, of course, kind of upped our college baseball coverage in recent years. To me, it's just kind of building that history with players that we hope to see in the majors one day. And I feel like I enjoy it because the different paths that all these guys take to even get into professional baseball, I think, is so interesting just because of the range and the number. There are more, you know, levels that you can play organized of baseball than really any other sport, you know, in this country. And I think that that's a really cool and unique thing. And I think trying to tackle that is daunting and but eternally fascinating. And again, like for the purposes of our job covering Major League Baseball, I just feel like it helps inform so much about the context of these people. And now that I've done this pretty intensely since 2020, you know, those guys are now starting to get to the big leagues, and having that history, I feel like, helps me. And I just think it's fun to kind of learn those stories.
You can't know where you're going if you don't know where you've been.
Amen, brother. So that's the gist of it. And then beyond that, it's just interesting to see the trends and to understand what teams care about and why teams care about them and all the different processes, because teams all do this very differently. And you certainly learn that as you talk to people around the industry. But let's focus on this year. Why is this year a particularly interesting one? Or do you want to just
I want to let noobs feel a little bit comfortable.
Sure.
So the MLB draft obviously pales in comparison in its popularity to the NFL in the NBA draft. And there are two main reasons for that. One, the players are further away, right? If you're drafted by a baseball team, usually,
unless you're Paul Skenes,
usually it takes at least 2 years to show up in the major leagues.
Yeah.
If not longer for some of the high school players. Mm-hmm. The NBA and the NFL, it's almost always right away.
Yeah.
At least at the top of the draft, right?
Right.
So that time makes it more difficult to convince a fan, like, you need to care about this person right now. If I'm a basketball fan, I like the Hawks, and the Hawks pick a guy, he's going to be in the NBA right. playing in 4 months.
Right. You can think about it as, oh, we need this. You know, like the team I watch at the highest level needs this, and I would like, and maybe we can get that right now. In that way, it functions more as a part of the offseason. That's another weird thing about baseball, right, is that the draft happens during the season. But in that way, you're thinking about adding to your team. And in baseball, it's a little bit more, it's more nebulous because you're bringing in even more players. It's 20 rounds. Some teams are going to add, you know, 20 to 25 players over the next week. But it is just still, it's hard to really wrap your mind around. But I also think that people are now quick to dismiss it in the same way. That I think we've maybe gone too far in the other direction where it's like, I'm not going to have to care about this guy for 5 years. And we have seen enough cases now, and especially with how much college baseball has grown from a national standpoint, I think that there is some more familiarity with some of the guys at the top, and we should definitely kind of get into some of those guys.
And then the other reason why it's maybe a little bit less popular is that it's so freaking complicated. It is more complicated. In the NFL and the NBA draft, the players usually go in order of quality.
Yeah.
More often than not. Because of how the bonus pool system works in the MLB draft, a player drafted at pick 47 could make twice as much money as a player drafted at pick 28, right? Just to pick two random spots.
Sure. Yeah.
And so what that means is there are just a lot more rules going on that mean to understand the draft, you have to really dive in. Once you get there, it's awesome.
Yeah.
It's like playing a complicated board game.
Yeah. And then it becomes a puzzle that is fun to track before the draft and after the draft when you see the guys that sign. But in general, yes, it is a little bit less simple than the best guys go in the order of the teams that think that they are. But I still think in general in the first round, you know, it is generally, you know, the 30 best players or 30 of the 40 or so best players are going to go in the first round on Sunday. And so that is, I think, a good place to start this year where I think why I am so excited for this one, and of course I get more excited every season just because I get deeper into it, but this is one of the more unpredictable tops of the draft we've had in a long time, and not just with the first pick, but even though we've had a tier of about 10 players that have pretty much been at the top of the class for pretty much the whole season, but it's 10 players. It's not 3 or 4 or 5, which it was last year. Last year we had a very clear group of 5. They did end up going in the top 5 picks, but not in the order we expected. You know, even last year when we thought we had it pegged, like, okay, it's going to be Skeens or Cruz, and then it's going to be Skeens or Cruz, and then it's going to be Wyatt Langford, we'll go third. And then it was like, oh, actually, he didn't go third. He goes fourth, right? And so Max Clark going third last year was a shocker to everybody last year. So there are still a lot of surprises that are in play here. But because we have these 10 players, 8 college players, and 2 high schoolers that are at the top of the class, when you start there, now you start to, when we get to Sunday, okay, now I can understand if those 10 don't go in the top 10 in some order, I know something interesting happened.
Right.
And that's where the fun kind of begins.
So I think let's just go through those 10 players. Mm-hmm. And we'll go through them in the order that you ranked them.
We can do that. Sure. Yeah. So I published my top 50 rankings, which you can take a look at. It's a lot of words, but I organized it by tier to kind of help people understand where the industry is at and kind of the conversations that they're having. So I ended up grouping some players together a little bit conveniently, but I also think it is reflective of kind of how the industry is talking about these players. But though that 10 we can get into.
So number one is Travis Bazana, or should we say Travis Bazana?
Yeah.
Because indeed he is Australian. Second baseman from Oregon State, came over to the States after finishing high school in Australia and was absolutely spectacular as a Beaver for 3 years. The profile here is very interesting. Second baseman, do not get drafted first overall. Yep. Bazana is in the mix here. He is kind of a smaller, he's like 6 foot, probably a little bit shorter than that.
Yeah.
Pretty stocky, really tightly wound, but his bat speed at the plate, the violence in his swing is really, really special. He is not going to play shortstop. That is just a fact. Most guys, even like Tamar Johnson, who's a top prospect, he was drafted as a shortstop. That is not the case here.
Yeah, he is a second baseman. I think he's more likely to play center field someday than he is to play shortstop just because of the arm strength. But the speed is there. But it's the bat speed, and it is just an approach that has gotten better and better and better every season, to where this year he has double the number of walks than strikeouts, and he basically doubled his previous career total in home runs in one season. He is what you're, again, production wise and also energy wise, for better or for worse, but I think people are just going to absolutely love this guy. It's left-handed Bregman, right? I mean, it's kind of, in some ways it's a lazy comp, but I also think when you look at a guy who's that's just like, oh, how much power potential is there really? Well, he's getting the most out of it. And he keeps getting better and better and better. And for a dude who was, you know, relatively unknown in Australia 4 years ago to now be considered at worst the third best player in this draft is a pretty amazing accomplishment.
There's also an intensity to him that is very different.
Yeah.
And comes from growing up in a different baseball culture that we're not used to seeing, really, for position players more so. The makeup is great. People talk about this kid, like, he's very, very special. He is, I would say, the favorite to go first overall, but I would put that
not
number
favorite
at 38.2%.
Yep. Number two player on my board, Charlie Condon, probably I mean Bizana's OPS wasn't that far behind, he was second, but Condon, Golden Spikes winner, leads the country in both batting average and home runs, one of the top home run hitting seasons in the history of college baseball. And this dude was, you know, a redshirt at Georgia a couple years ago, where he was not super heavily recruited out of high school. He was going to play football and baseball at a D3 school, Rhodes College in Tennessee. And then Georgia's like, all right, yeah, you can have a spot, but like, we can't really guarantee you anything. He's like, all right, that's fine, I'll redshirt. And then by the time I'm ready to play, I will be one of the best players in college baseball. That's what he was last year. This year, he was historically good. This is a, you know, body comp wise and production wise, it is very Chris Bryant-y in the sense that he has played third base. He's played a lot of outfield. Again, the question is the fact that he played both corner defensive spots and all three outfield spots, including some center field, is that a reflection that, oh, he's versatile, he's athletic? Or is it like, my logic to some degree is, okay, if you could play third, you would just be playing third. Like, I think, I understand it's smart to showcase maybe some underrated athleticism, but there's also some reasonable scouts say that, listen, if this guy's a first baseman, now there's even more pressure on the bat. However, this is a bat that can probably handle the pressure. I mean, at this point, the production is so overwhelming that most people kind of think that, yeah, this is about as safe as it gets.
I am a little bit lower on Condon compared to most people. I would take him third overall, I mean, to be clear.
Yep.
But I think the issue with Condon for me is I don't love the swing. It's a little grooved for pitches lower in the zone. He loads his hands low. That's typically a swing that is susceptible to elevated velocity, which, as we know, has taken over the game over the last 3 years and is not something he saw consistently in college. Now, again, the numbers were so overwhelming and you believe enough in the athleticism that he can make that adjustment. I would say that if I thought he could play third base every day, then I'm like, okay, I'm willing to look past that. But the floor here scares me a little bit just because of what we've seen recently with Andrew Vaughn and Spencer Torkelson.
Yep.
And I think that I'm not saying this is a bad player. I'm just saying I'm slightly lower on him than the consensus.
Yeah, and that's, but again, he did in the SEC. And interestingly, like, underlying wise, he was better against fastball. Like, off speed is really what gave him more trouble against spin. Yeah. So, which is also a thing that they do in professional baseball, believe it or not.
Yeah.
they throw a lot of really good off speed.
I would say that the most linked player to team in the top 10 that we've really seen is Condon to the Reds.
Yeah.
Now, I know Kylie McDaniel at ESPN just released his mock draft and had the Reds taking Caglione. However, just based upon what we've seen for the last month, that's what it is. But also, we don't know.
But that's why I brought up what happened last year, where it was like obvious. Literally, everyone was like, obviously, the Tigers will take Langford.
Nope.
They didn't. So there is so much room for surprise here. Okay, Condon 2.
Third player is shortstop J.J. Weatherholt from West Virginia. Can he play shortstop? That's one of the big questions with him. Weatherholt entered the year as probably the top prospect in the draft, but he struggled with some injuries, particularly some soft tissue hamstring stuff that kind of stymied his junior season with the Mountaineers. We sat down with him at the MLB Combine and got to know him a little bit. I'm a huge fan. I would say if he didn't get hurt, he would be really, really up there for the number one overall pick.
Yeah, and I mean, clearly, if you listen to that conversation with him, I mean, he certainly believes he can play shortstop, and that's totally fair. But yeah, some teams view the recurring hamstring stuff as scary. Some teams think it's overblown, but he had certainly the biggest 2023 season. And so I think there's a lot of reasons to think that he would just be an excellent pick, especially if you believe he can play shortstop, because bats of ball wise, he's as good as it gets. I mean, even more than Bizzano, more than Condon, this is about the safest bat you're going to have. How much power he's not a huge guy, and he's not quite as like jacked as Bizzano.
Yeah.
And so the power potential is maybe a little bit lower, but I mean, we love this kid. It's not even a question. And if he falls because of injury to, you know, 5 or 6 or 7, I would be, you know, doing backflips if I was picking at those picks. Cause the notion, like, if you told those teams, yeah, you could get Weatherhold at 5 or 6 or 7 or 9, like, you would be beyond yourself.
This is who I would take one. We'll talk a little bit about that later. Mm-hmm. Number 4, Jack Caglione, University of Florida. You've heard his name almost certainly. First base / left-handed pitcher. Let's get rid of that right away.
Yeah.
Jack Cags, Jack Tani, whatever you want to call him, incredible two-way player in college. He is a pro hitter.
Yeah.
Teams are not going to have him pitch. So when evaluating him, we are evaluating him as a hitter.
Yeah, and yes, he has thrown 100 miles an hour before, but he was throwing like 89 by the end of the season. Now he was tired because he was carrying Florida pretty much all the way to the College World Series. But he has been even more than Condon, his kind of in-box presence, partially because of the kind of hitter he is, not just because he has the most raw power, but because he swings at everything and can make contact with everything. He's the most terrifying player to face in college baseball. And that has been true for multiple years now. And that is a special thing. That is a thing. That is a thing that there are teams, even with, you know, like Condon or some of the other best college hitters of the draft, that teams say, you know, we can pitch around, we can deal with it. With Cags, you can't. I mean, you can, you know, throw up 4 and walk him. Don't throw any pitches. But if you're going to pitch to him in any capacity, certainly at the college level, he might hit it over the fence.
The ceiling here, from a production standpoint, slightly different types of hitters, is like Matt Olson, right? Yep. If everything clicks, he is the top 3 first baseman in the world,
yep,
right? Yep. Now, the problem here is chase rate. Let's talk about that for a quick second. Cags can hit a lot of pitches out of the zone. He is a good bad ball hitter. As the pitching gets better, that becomes less of a good quality.
The bad balls are not as bad. And so while the quality of the stuff outside the zone is maybe something that he can get to and hit over the fence in college, maybe he can still, because he has defined, he's completely, that's the thing, he cut his strikeout rate in half. Like, so much about his profile does not seem possible, and yet he's done it. So maybe he can keep doing it, and you can imagine there are some teams that are just going to be smitten with sort of the unicorn element of him just as a hitter. Forget the fact that he can, you know, throw upper 90s from the left side. So that is what makes him the total wild card, because, man, if Cleveland takes him first, I would be shocked. But also, like, I don't know, like, you could imagine that he's the kind of guy that feels the most different than anything we've ever seen in a lot of senses. So I think that's what makes him so exciting, but also, you know, kind of terrifying.
He played a lot of first base for Florida. I would not be surprised if a team gives him some run in a corner outfield spot just to give it a shot in pro ball. Let's move on to the pitchers. There are 2 pitchers in this top 10, and we're just going to group them together.
Yes.
2 college arms.
Yep.
A righty named Chase Burns from Wake Forest, and a lefty named Hagen Smith from Arkansas. These 2 have been the top 2 college pitchers in the draft for most of this season, kind of the second half moving on. I would say, who do you prefer of these 2 guys?
I'm like, man, I'm Burns slightly, but again, me and the rest of the industry has gone back and forth. Both of these guys have had, you know, relief concerns in the past because of either their delivery or their strike throwing consistency, or, you know, Hagen Smith, who had a Tommy John in high school, and we haven't seen him have quite the bulk that we've seen for even a guy like Burns or some of the other top pitching prospects. But on an inning-to-inning basis, I mean, I wrote about this in my rankings, their dominance was somehow not that far behind Skeens. Like,
when you saw
Skeens' numbers last year, 45% strikeout rate last year for Paul Skeens, you know, batters at 165 against him. I mean, Smith and Burns had 49% strikeout rates, and batters also hit, you know, 144 against Hagen Smith, 175 against Chase Burns. Now, the reason they're not Paul Skeens is because the strike throwing is not nearly as consistent. The aptitude to improve is not, I mean, their stuff is clearly ticked up, and Burns' stuff is outrageous, but because of their deliveries, because of their size, because of their history, and we've seen them struggle, that's why they're a notch below. Now, these are still very special college pitchers, and if Skeens never existed, I think we would be talking about them in more of an upper tier, you know, kind of level of some of the best college prospects, pitching prospects we've seen in some time. We've just been spoiled because of what Skeens has done.
And there's real relief risk here. And there was not real relief risk with Paul Skeens.
No. No. I would say, but yeah, both of these guys are really interesting, and Smith especially. Smith had a 17 strikeout game earlier this season against Oregon State, you know, one of the better offenses in the country. It's a really special group, these two. And I don't know though. So it would not be surprised. We could see Burns go as high as three. We could see Smith certainly in the top five. Burns is more getting guys to chase, whereas Smith can get a lot of, you know, whiffs in the strike zone. So both of them are awesome. Again, Skeens is just kind of ruining it for everybody else.
At seven, Braden Montgomery, an outfielder from Texas A&M. He spent his first 2 years of his college career at Stanford. And it's probably worth noting, Braden Montgomery is not like a Stanford athlete handout situation. This is like a guy with one of them big old brains who could have probably gotten into Stanford if he never picked up a glove. But for his junior year, he transferred to Texas A&M. He grew up in Mississippi as a high schooler. He is a very interesting player.
Yeah. I mean, he is a switch hitter, which certainly sets him apart atop this class. And that's the biggest thing with him is he got a lot better from the right side this year. But there are some scouts that still say there's no way this guy's going to be able to hit right-handed in pro ball. And so that kind of hampers his stock. Still, you're still talking about, even if he's just a left-handed bat, also nearly elite raw power, exceptional approach, especially from the left side, that's improved all 3 years. And yeah, I mean, he also pitched in high school and pitched a little bit earlier in college, and he's got, you know, one of the best arms you're ever going to see in right field. So more of a classic right field profile. If you do believe he can switch hit, I could see him going in the top five. But he also fractured his ankle in horrific fashion in the Super Regional. So not an injury that is expected to hamper him long term, but because he had sort of a cold end to the year and then he fractured his ankle, so he wasn't playing in the College World Series with A&M, he kind of fell a little bit out of that top mix. But I have to imagine there are some teams, like, if I wouldn't be shocked if the A's take him, right? If the White Sox take him, I could still see him going in the top five. He's been famous for a long time too, which is a difference than some of these other guys, especially the hitters at the top who we didn't really know about as high schoolers. People have known about Braden Montgomery since he was like 15. So there's going to be some teams that have loved him for a long time. And maybe that helps him out on draft day.
8 and 9, the first two high school players on the board. Connor Griffin, a shortstop, maybe center fielder, who knows, from Mississippi. He is the best traditional athlete in this group, but has by far the biggest concern over whether his swing is going to work.
Yeah, and just hit tool, you know, it's a little bit easier to take that. There's going to be risk with any high schooler for a million reasons, just because you have so much less data. And that's how I feel when I'm doing my evaluations and when I'm putting my rankings together. I end up shrugging on the high school stuff just because I don't. There are people that do to cover high school stuff very well that go to the showcase events, and, you know, I lean on those people a lot. But college, you just have so much more data to work with, and you've watched them against differing levels of competition that you know are going to be professionals someday, that are going to be major leaguers someday. I mean, it's not Connor Griffin's fault that hit the numbers he put up in Mississippi are like truly laughable. Gatorade National Player of the Year deserved, stealing 77. Like, okay, great. He steals 77 bases out of 78 tries. That's very impressive. That also tells me who you're playing against, respectfully, right? And so that's a situation that is not his fault. He's done everything you could possibly ask. He reclassified. He was originally going to be a part of the 2025 draft. Now he's one of the younger players in this year's draft instead of one of the older players in next year's draft. He's taken all the right steps. We talked to him at the combine. Very impressive, very confident. But we just don't know. I mean, there's a chance that his athletic gifts are so overwhelming that he is going to make whatever adjustment, whatever team needs him to make. And he's just going to be an awesome, awesome player. There's also the chance that he needs to end up with the right team that can help him make those adjustments. And that's the thing with him. I don't know who that team that is.
There's also a chance he just never makes the adjustments, right?
Yeah.
I would say the range of outcomes for him is the biggest of anybody in this top 10.
Yeah, oh, for sure. That's easily. Putting injuries aside, yeah, I mean, it absolutely. But again, this is just for as far as we've come with the data that we have and the analytic, the level that teams use to the amount of stats and numbers that we can use to say the trust that this player is going to perform at the major league level someday. ultimately, there are still a ton of old school scouts out there that look at the guy that runs the fastest and throws the ball the hardest and hits the ball the farthest and say, I want that guy on my team. And I get it. I can't really blame them. And so that's why Connor Griffin is still going to be, in all likelihood, a top 10 pick. He could go in the top five. He could, you know, maybe go 12, 13. I don't know. But he is absolutely going to be one of the names I'm most fascinated where he lands, because I hope that he has gets this is such a crazy place or way to say the sentence. I hope he gets the help he needs. Like, but that is, I truly mean that. Like, I really do. I hope that he is in the right environment to become the best version of Connor Griffin. That's how
I hope he's hanging around a good crowd.
Yeah, that is.
You don't want to get mixed up. You don't want to get mixed up with the Pirates and their hitting development.
Right.
Respectfully.
Right. So anyway, then you have Bryce Rainer, who's a shortstop from Harvard Westlake. That's a lot more of the traditional. Like, I could stop there.
Shortstop
from Harvard Westlake.
Harvard Westlake is, just so people know.
Yeah.
Lucas Giolito, Max Fried, Jack Flaherty, Pico Armstrong.
Yeah. And more to come. And obviously, Bryce Rainer could become the next one. He just kind of checks all the boxes. He's been performing on the showcase circuit he's been performing in high school against good high school competition in Southern California. He's a little bit older for the class. And, you know, he kind of popped even more. He, you know, coming into the year, clearly a first round pick, but he really put himself up there with Griffin over the course of this spring. We talked to him too at the combine. He knows how good he is, but also he understands, like, all the Harvard Westlake guys have a very interesting personality in slightly different ways. And we've gotten to know a few of them over the years, and Rainer will be the next one.
Well, it's,
I get it, man. Yeah.
It's one of the top private schools in LA, and sure. it creates a certain energy, and
some people don't like that.
Some people don't like
some, that. That's another situation. There are going to be some, and it's, I can't imagine Bryce Rainer, I can't imagine coming out of an interview with Bryce Rainer not liking him, but I can't imagine it. Some people will put that background in a negative way, just for a lot of reasons. But from a pure, you know, profile standpoint, it's whatever. Yeah, he can play shortstop. He obviously has pretty much hit ever since scouts have been watching him the last few years. And yeah, so he kind of checks a lot of the boring boxes, but it is what the top 10 pick kind of looks like.
Last one, and this is a guy who has slid to the point that some people might not even have them in the top 10. It's Nick Kurtz, a first baseman from Wake Forest. Jordan, you had him in a slightly different tier than the other nine players that we had. Why is that? Why has he fallen a little bit? But what makes him still a really intriguing player?
If you pull up Nick Kurtz's stats, what more do you want him to do?
Play center field.
Before we get to anything, what position, whatever, offensively, 3 years at Wake Forest, he hits .333, .510, .725. 59 more walks than strikeouts, 61 home runs. Unbelievable run. Essentially a flawless run through 3 years in the ACC from a statistical standpoint. And that's the thing. Some teams are going to look at that and be like, how could we possibly ask him to do more? However, he is a first baseman. Now he's left-handed, so that helps. He's a good defender at first base. The two main things with Nick Kurtz that concern teams, and I guess concern me, are shoulder injuries that have popped up. He had a weird rib injury last year, too. And he, unlike I'm pretty sure every other hitter in the top, has never really performed with wood bats at any level. He's not performed because of some of those injuries. He's never played for Team USA. He's never played in a collegiate summer league. I imagine in high school he probably did use some wood bats at some point in the showcase, but he was not really – he was a pitcher for a lot of his high school career too. So now we have other ways to measure his power and that stuff that still are very encouraging, and the patience is really strong. But that's something that makes him stand out in the opposite way, and why I have him in the same tier as James Tipps from Florida State, the ACC, who was the ACC player of the year. We thought it was going to be Nick Kurtz. It ends up being James Tipps at Florida State. He also has a monster season with more walks than strikeouts, and he was one of the best players on the Cape Cod League last year. So I think that kind of boosts him up into that level. And I don't know. Maybe I'm overthinking this one. I think Kurtz could still go in the top five. I think he could go in the 10 to 15. It's possible that this is like a, you know, prospect fatigue type thing where I'm just like tired of thinking about Nick Kurtz, but I think he's clearly doing something right. You can't have these kind of numbers for three straight years in the ACC and not be a pretty good hitter, but I'm just not that excited. Maybe I'm wrong.
So that's the top 10. Just very quickly, one more time, I'll run through it. Travis Pezzana, Australian second baseman from Oregon State. Charlie Condon, big, donkey, Golden Spikes winner from Georgia. J.J. Weatherholt, shortstop from West Virginia with potential hamstring soft tissue issues, or the best bat in the draft. Jack Caglione, former two-way player from the University of Florida. The two pitchers, Chase Burns at Wake Forest. Hagen Smith, the lefty at Arkansas. Braden Montgomery, Texas A&M outfielder. Connor Griffin, high schooler from Mississippi. Bryce Rayner, a high schooler from California. And Nick Kurtz, a first baseman from Wake Forest. Jordan, before we take a quick break, who do you think Cleveland takes at number one? That is really the sexiest question. And it will determine how the rest of the draft plays out this year. Obviously, that's the case in every single season with the draft. But Cleveland's selection will send this adventure down a different road.
Yes, because in this year in particular, you have this top 10, but I guarantee you every team in the top 10 has them in a slightly different order. And so that means that if J.J. Weatherholt doesn't go one, it doesn't necessarily mean he goes two. It means he might go five. He might go seven. It's going to depend. I still am just going to guess Bazana. I don't have any insight on that. I think we're all guessing at this point, and that makes this more fun. But I keep thinking back to that Langford pick last year. We're so quick to assume that, oh, yeah, they would pass on Condon, or, oh, yeah, they're going to take a high school guy. We have no idea with these teams. And some of these teams have changed scouting directors in recent years and changed the front office, changed their model. And so there's so many things that go into that. But that Cleveland pick, I hope we get there to Sunday night and we don't know. You know, we've had some where sometimes we get there and we didn't know. And even last year, right? For the most part, baseball does a pretty good job. Obviously, the reporters are going to get there probably close to the first round pick. But I hope it doesn't get spoiled. And I'm excited to find out once they announce it.
Who would you take if you were Cleveland?
I would take, I have Bazana at the top. I think he has the highest floor of anyone in this draft. And I think he has probably one of the four or five high ceilings. And that's enough of a combination. If I was taking the first pick, then I would do that. But I really, really like a lot of these players. And I think it is also interesting because sometimes you say, oh, I like to be at the back of the tier, so I just end up with whoever's left.
You're saying if you're a team.
If you're a team, right, maybe it's great. You want to pick 9, 10, 11. But because the range of opinions varies so wildly with those, it's not just like, oh, I'll take any of them that falls, because you might want the one to fall and that might not actually happen for you. Besides that, yeah, who do you agree? Would you take, you said you would take Weatherholt.
I think I would take Weatherholt at one. Just his ability to maybe potentially play shortstop is the separator for me.
Yep.
Taking a second baseman, number one, even a player as special as Bazana, scares me a little bit.
Sure.
Same thing with Condon. At the same time, like, again, I would take those guys. They're not bad. Like, when you're picking one thing over the other, it's like tacos versus pizza. Like, it's just, you know, it's that conversation. Yep. The last thing I want to ask you before you take a break about the draft. Who's the Ohtani pick? Now, what I mean by that is Shohei Ohtani, I don't know if you heard about this, but Shohei Ohtani signed with the Dodgers over the offseason for a bucket of money that he will one day receive in the future. And in return for losing Ohtani, the Angels get a compensation pick in the second round. It is pick number 74 in the draft. Yes. And it will be, look, did things go well for the Angels vis-a-vis Shohei Ohtani? No. But maybe, Jordan, they get the next Shohei Ohtani at 74.
Yeah, well, of course, you know, they're picking 8 and 45. So they'll have 3 picks on day one. Day one is the first 2 rounds and the two compensation rounds. There's the competitive balance picks. And then there are some compensation picks that you get for example, Sonny Gray got the Twins a pick after the first round. The Angels get a pick after the second round because of how much money their payroll. So they don't get as high of a compensation pick. But the last pick of the first round on Sunday will be pick number 74, that Angels pick.
Second round. Last pick of the second round.
Yeah, last pick of the second round. Last pick of day one. Sorry, last pick of day one on Sunday will be pick number 74. And it's completely unfair to the kid that gets taken with that pick, but I am absolutely very excited. It's unfortunate because they will be asked about that. Like, I guarantee you they're going to want to talk to pick number 74 more than they want to talk to pick number 45. Maybe not pick number 8, but definitely pick number 45 is not going to get nearly the attention of pick 74 for better or for worse. So anyway, the Angels draft.
Feels so bad.
Yeah, it is very unfortunate.
I hope it's a college kid just so that they can like deal with that more. Like, I'd rather have a 21-year-old face that than an 18-year-old.
Unless it's like one of the high schoolers. But that's probably even worse. With like, who's like kind of like a two-way player.
Maybe
like,
they'll
there's
pass.
A bunch of those.
Maybe they'll pass.
Anyway.
We're good.
Yeah. Like, nah, we don't want to. No. It's like, no, you better nail this pick. That there's talk about pressure. Because the whole point, remember, why do they not trade him? They're like, oh, we're going to win. And then worst case scenario, we'll get a comp pick. Well, you better do something with this comp pick. All right, Jake. We're going to take a quick break. And when we return, we're going to talk about the top-selling jerseys of 2024 so far. And I haven't seen this list yet. You have. We'll be right back on Baseball Marvelous.
And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. Jake Mintz, Jordan Schusterman. Listeners, you have been drafted already. That already happened. Mm. No more draft talk. Jordan, let's talk about jerseys. New jerseys, but not New Jersey. Mm. I got an email with the top 20 best-selling jerseys in Major League Baseball this year from MLB. Mm-hmm. This is brand new, hot off the presses information. And you have not seen this list. We thought we'd do a little game and have you, Jordan Schusterman, try and guess the top selling jerseys in the league this year to this point. All right. And how we're going to do this is you are going to rattle off names and I am going to say yes or no.
All right.
Does that work for you?
That is fine. Hopefully I can get more than half of them. We will not go until I run out of names.
All right. Yeah, there are a lot of players.
Okay. Well, there's 20. There's not.
Well, I'm saying in baseball.
Oh, yes. That's true. All right. I'm going to go on a limb here, and I'm going to go with Aaron Judge is going to be my first pick.
Aaron Judge of what team?
The Yankees of New York.
Okay. Aaron Judge.
The New York Highlanders.
The New York Highlanders. Aaron Judge is number three.
Number three. All right. I'm going to go with Juan Soto. My second selection.
Juan Soto is number six.
I'm going to go with Mr. Ohtani fellow, who we talked about earlier. And maybe the 74th pick of the draft will one day be on this list as well.
Number one, Shohei Ohtani, Los Angeles Dodgers, number one. I would love to know by how much, probably a whole lot.
All right, Mookie, Freddie.
Mookie is at four. Freddie is at 20. He just snuck off.
That's huge for me to sneak in Freddie there because that would have been a tough miss. All right, we're going to go with the defending World Series champion and we're going to go with Corey Seager.
Correct. Corey Seager is at nine.
I would Semien be on there too. I am... Yes, Semien.
No. Okay. No, Marcus
okay.
Semien.
I'm going to go with Adolis Garcia.
No, okay. You're overthinking
all
this.
Right. Okay, sorry. All right, sorry. Let's go back to the obvious picks. Fernando Tatis Jr.
Fernando Tatis Jr. is at number eight.
Okay, great. Rafael Devers.
Rafael Devers is not on this list.
That's unfortunate. Bryce Harper.
Bryce Harper is at number two.
Okay, there we go. Trey Turner.
Trey Turner is not on this list. Yes. He's at 13.
Okay.
My fault.
All right. Here's one that I believe made it last year as a rookie, and I would imagine he's on this list now, is that Ellie De La Cruz.
Ellie De La Cruz is at number 15, yes.
Oh, okay. I actually thought he would maybe be a little bit higher than that, but okay, that is fine. Okay, who else could be on this list? Jose Altuve.
At number 10, very good. You now have eight of the top 10.
Okay. Oh, all right. That's good. Okay, we're going to go with Julio Rodriguez.
Not on this list.
That is very unfortunate. I guess they bought all the jerseys last year, and this year he has not given people as many reasons to actually buy one. Wow. Okay. That is concerning. Adley Rutschman.
Adley Rutschman is indeed on this list. He is at number 16.
Now, is Gunnar Henderson on this list too?
I could tell you.
Yeah, that is a guess.
No.
Okay. He is not on this list. I didn't feel great about that. Let's go back to the Yankees. Oh, man, I don't know. No, yes, no. Garrett Cole?
No.
Okay, so there are...
You have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 players left. I will give you 4 more guesses.
Okay, Ronald Acuña Jr., even though he got injured.
Yes, he's at number 5.
Okay, Matt Olson and Austin Riley.
Matt Olson is at number 17. Austin Riley is not on this list.
Okay, that's fine. Probably not any more Braves, I wouldn't think. Then we will go to Manny Machado.
Manny Machado is on this list, number 18.
Okay, interesting. All right. Again, Padres fans, man. They'll buy stuff.
They love shirts.
That's cool. I definitely support that. Bobby Witt Jr.?
Bobby Witt Jr. not on this list. Okay. I would say for me the most surprising player not on this list.
Yeah, but if Gunner's not on there, I don't know. I'm not shocked by that, especially if Gunner's not on there. He'll obviously be on there next year. But again, Ellie being on there and Bobby Witt Jr. not being on there, I do think is significant. So I will just say that. Francisco Lindor.
Francisco Lindor is at 7. You have now gotten the entire top 10.
Okay. Pete Alonso.
Pete Alonso is at 12. Very good.
Okay. I'm going to tap out now. I'm sure I could
very
get more.
Very good, Jordan.
But I'm sure I could get a few more. Who am I missing?
You're missing 3. You're missing Nolan Arenado at 11.
I was like, Cardinals, maybe, sure.
Very odd.
Yeah, sure.
Mason Wynn, where are you at? Vlad?
Oh, duh, sorry.
At 14?
Yep, that's obvious.
And Bo Bichette at 19.
Oh, man. Bo's so cool. That's tough, though, man. Bo's still over Bobby Witt. But hey, Canada. I mean, I guess the people in Alberta would rather, you know, buy a Bo Bichette jersey than buy a Bobby Witt Jr. one.
So the list from last year I now have in front of me. Okay.
Yeah. Any changes?
Julio was at 7 last year.
Yeah.
And has fallen.
They bought
all
the jerseys.
Off. Joey Votto was on this list last year. Austin Riley was on this list last year. Ozzy Albies was on this list last year. But the most notable thing, and you didn't even think about it, is that I would imagine for the first time in a decade.
Oh, Mike Trout.
Mike Trout is not on this list.
Yeah.
And that is not particularly surprising, but it is notable and it is sad. He was 10th last year at the end of the season. Maybe he comes back and gets hot and those sales go back up.
Yeah.
But it does to me feel like the end of an era in a very weird way.
Yeah.
Mike Trout not on the top 20. Oh. There were more Bo Bichette jerseys purchased.
I'm moving Canada to the side. But the point is definitely taken. Like, that is really, really something. I was also just going to say on Arenado quickly is this is the first time he hasn't been an All-Star since 2014. Certainly doesn't deserve it this year. But, you know, even last year, he still ended up being an All-Star. So we're moving on a little bit to that next generation of infielders. And, man, Trout, that hurts. That hurts,
right?
Man. That hurts.
Right?
Come on. Now, you know what? I might go buy a Mike Trout jersey.
I'm going to go buy 6,000 Mike Trout jerseys.
I mean, I feel like he should still be on there ahead of some of those guys. Remember, by the way, this year how he started.
Amazing.
He looked like Mike Trout again.
Right, just to review. Freeman, Bichette, Machado, Olsen, Rushman, De La Cruz, Guerrero, Turner, Alonso, Arenado, Altuve, Seager, Tatis Jr., Lindor, Soto, Acuna, Betts, Judge, Harper, and the 74th overall pick of the draft, Shohei Ohtani.
No Luke Rayleigh. Interesting. All right. Let's move on. Let's finish up here with the good, the bad, and the ugly. Jake, something good, something bad, something ugly from the week. Here's my good. Paul Skeens. Ever heard of him?
Yeah.
I do think that all the Paul, we participated in the Shooting Star All-Star game, whatever. But really, it was like, I just want to watch Paul Skeens pitch all the time. And I was bummed yesterday because I was on a plane. It was the first, I think it was the first Skeens start I wasn't like pretty much locked in on from the first pitch.
You didn't buy the Wi-Fi?
I did buy the Wi-Fi, but it was like, you know, the range, like while you're in, like the no-hitter was essentially in progress before the Wi-Fi was like working. And it was like that window, you know, when you're trying to get up there and you want the Wi-Fi to start working. So then I got on there tapped in right as he was getting pulled.
Wow.
But I watched the highlights later and
happened?
Holy crap. Yeah. 7 no-hit innings. Pretty cool. That's what's good. Nothing else. We don't have to talk about anything else about this because I don't really care. Because the point is that Paul Skeens is one of the best pitchers in the world, whether he starts the All-Star game or not. I am just loving every version of his starts where, I mean, some of the sliders he was ripping off yesterday.
The backdoor sliders.
Oh, my gosh. To poor Bryce Turang, just had no idea what to do with those. He was throwing some more traditional changeups. The splinker was outrageous. It was just, I mean, he's so amazing. So, yeah, Paul Skeens is good. There's my good. Pretty lazy, but I feel pretty good about it.
If this was 2020 and it was a doubleheader, it would have been a no-hitter.
Wow. So true. Do we miss 7-inning games?
No.
No. I don't think we do. No. What is your good this week, Chick?
My good this week is the skills competition at the Futures game that is happening.
Yeah.
People just don't seem to know about this for whatever reason.
We keep having conversations with people talking about, oh, we've done some radio hits where it's like, oh, we could do spice up the All-Star game. Oh, what would be interesting if we did, like, it would be cool to do a skills showcase. Like, yeah, no, they're doing it.
They're doing this. They are doing this. They have not been promoting it. I wrote about it, talked to some people about at MLB about the skills competition, and it is weird and whimsical and wonky, and I'm excited to see what it looks like. If you ever played MVP Baseball 2005, there was a hitting mini game in that video game where you got points for spraying the ball around to specific locations on the field. That's what this is going to be. It is going to take place after the Futures game with eight participants, eight minor leaguers, eight prospects, right? And they are going to compete in three rounds. Round one is going to be hitting targets that are laid out throughout the field. There will be targets down the right field and left field lines. There will be targets in the gaps, 4 points in the gaps, eight down the lines, and then there will be bunt targets.
Yes.
Which, if you get it in a very small circle, you can get to 24 points for nailing
your,
a bunt.
If your bunting is electric, and I hope it's someone's strategy to only bunt.
Only bunt.
Again, there's going to be so many, you know, ins and outs of this that we just don't know because it's completely unprecedented.
Round two is going to be call your shot. They'll get eight swings, okay? They have to hit one to the pull side, one to the opposite field, and one ball up the middle, and they have to, like, call it. They're like, I am now pulling the ball. Mm-hmm. And they pull it and they get points for that. Once they've hit one to left, center, and right, then they can just be like, I'm only pulling the ball. And they will continue to receive points for that. The final round is home runs. You get 6 points for a pulled homer or a dead center homer, and 12 points for an opposite field homer, which is super interesting.
I like that. I feel like you should get more to center than... Like, it feels weird that you get the same number of points as hitting it out to dead center as, like, pulling it off the foul pole.
It should be 6, 9, and 12.
Yeah, that would be an edit. But, which, again, they're clearly going to be tweaking this a few times. But the hope, and this is why this is good, and we're excited to see it in person, is that if it goes well, and if people see it and be like, that looks fun, that we can have it in the major league level someday. Because if this was happening in the big leagues and they said, hey, here are all these major league all-stars that are competing in this, you know, hitting competition, I think people would be talking about it. But ultimately, you know, when we're talking about Sebastian Walcott and Trey Morgan, you know, and Moises Ballesteros, who for dorks like us, we're amped. But to the casual fan, I understand it's that we're not as excited to watch those guys hit targets. You know, there's a difference there.
Not to call producer Andrew a casual, but
Andrew Hart's also in the room. Shout out Andrew, who's here.
He laughed when you said Moises Ballesteros. He was like, because that's clearly someone he's never heard of.
And that's fine. Well, that's not his job, right? He's just, as long as he makes sure that it sounds good when I say the
Moises Ballesteros,
yeah, then he's doing great.
Then you're
the
good.
Point is, most people, that's not as exciting as saying, oh yeah, we're going to see Ellie De La Cruz and, you know, all these awesome all-stars do it.
The reason it's good is MLB is trying something new and weird.
Yeah.
This game is rooted so much in history that we just get so traditionalist so often. And I give the league an iota of credit for just pushing this thing forward ever so slightly. It's good. This event could fall flat, and I still give them credit for trying something, for being bold and brave. Hopefully we see this in the big leagues one day. Amen. Jordan.
Yes.
What's bad? You bad?
Nah, dude. The Nats of Washington... Now, the Yankees have been the worst team in baseball over the last 20 games. So let's just remind everyone of that. 5-15 over their last 20. But the second worst team over that span is the Nationals. However, I'm in a good mood. So I'm going to spin this bad into the bad actually being good because the Nationals need a direction. And I think what is good here, even though this is in my bad because going 6-14 is not good, is they get to be bad and it's totally fine.
Like, totally fine.
Because James Wood is here and because there's enough, you're talking about the young players. There are not Nationals fans who are looking at this postseason picture the way basically every single, like the Mets and Cubs and even the Reds and even the Pirates, their fans are like, we got to go for it. Like, we need to try something. I think the Nats fans, tell me if I'm wrong, there are Nats fans listening to this. They're in a situation where they have now very naturally fallen into a position where we can trade the guys on short-term contracts, get a few more prospects, and then boom, like next year, let's spend some money this winter. Yep. Let's bring Juan Soto home, whatever. Like, let's woo, go for it. Hopefully. And maybe
football's
it's too.
Football's coming. Yeah.
We'll see if, again, maybe that's too generous of interpretation. But I think they're getting some clarity, some direction in a way that we're not like, oh, what a disappointment that we're saying about Toronto. Or, oh, what a disappointment the way we're talking about Chicago. No, the Nats are where they should be. And while they have been bad, they have lost 5 in a row. They have lost 14 in their last 20. It's actually kind of good.
Silver linings.
Yep.
You know what is bad, though, Jordan?
Yeah.
the good team, the Dodgers. Hmm. I saw the Dodgers this week in Philadelphia. They got swept by the Phillies. And I asked Dave Roberts after their loss in game two this week, post game, I said, when you have a series like this, do you view it as a litmus test or a measuring stick for you when you're going to play one of the other best teams in the league? And he said no, because the teams look so different when they face off in October as compared to what they look like now. And I get that. But for all of us, for the Dodgers to go into Philly and get pretty handily beaten in three games, it's hard not to have that be a takeaway. Mm-hmm. It's really not, right?
Yeah.
And when you saw the gap between these clubs and you look in the standings, I believe it's 6.5 right now between these two teams. And you're like, well, yeah. Now, granted, the Dodgers are missing some very good players. Mookie Betts is very good and is very hurt. Okay. Max Muncy has been out since mid-May.
He's very hurt.
Very hurt. Tyler Glasnow on the IL. Yoshinobu Yamamoto on the IL. Shohei Ohtani obviously not pitching. And then, you know, the pitching staff on the IL, it's just like an all-star team.
Yeah.
Clayton Kershaw and...
Well, now they're in the minors. I mean, there's a difference here, right?
Walker Buehler, Bobby Miller has been bad. And so, but for me, like watching the Dodgers, it was a reminder that they are not the favorite anymore in the National League. Yeah, it is that simple. When we went into this season, it was the Dodgers are the best team in the National League. The Braves are really good and the Phillies are really good. We understand this. But the Dodgers, this unit could be special. And that was understandable. Because we had Ohtani, we had Mookie, we had Freddie, we had Yamamoto, we had so much excitement. We had Glasnow signed to the extension. This Dodgers team, they are obviously not bad, but they are no different, fundamentally in my mind, to the Dodgers teams we have seen over the previous few years. We have a starting pitcher announced.
Oh, yeah. Who's that?
For the National League.
Let me guess. Does his name rhyme with Fall Cleans?
Paul Skeens, you heard it here. Probably not first. Paul Skeens.
Definitely not first, but at least you're hearing us say it. Well, I already talked about him. He's good. What a surprise.
That's early.
Yeah. I can't remember them ever. Did they announce the AL? I can't remember them ever announcing this far in advance.
Great. Love it.
But you know again, what? That is an example of MLB being like, oh, this is a different situation. I think Lovello had quotes about it last night where he was like, I'm going to have some situational awareness for this scenario. And so when I am making that decision, which is to say either he didn't make this decision because Torey Lovello is currently focused on finishing the first half strong and probably not thinking about who's starting the All-Star game. There's no reason for him to think about that until he gets to Texas. But it sounds like the decision's been made for him. And great.
Clap it up.
We did.
Paul Skeens,
we won.
All-Star starter.
Would he have started if he gave up 10 runs yesterday?
No, because he would have been like hurt. That doesn't happen. We will get Paul Skeens against Judge and Soto and Gunner, and it'll be great. Like, that's what we want. Good job, MLB. Thank you, producer Andrew, for letting us know. No notes. That's great.
Okay. Let's.
The Dodgers are bad.
Yeah, they are. They certainly are right now.
Just to finish the thought. A lot will change between now and October if these teams play, the Phillies and the Dodgers play in the postseason. A lot will change.
The Dodgers are going to make a very significant trade. That's how I feel.
Okay.
I don't think they are just like, oh, these guys will come back healthy. Like, I think they're going to say, screw it.
That's fine.
Yeah.
But. If I'm a Dodgers fan, I'm like, I've seen this before. I've seen this movie before.
Yeah, I guess. But that's also a reason to not even care what's going on right now, because they'll still probably win 99 games.
Which is boring.
Which is weird. No, it is boring. I've thought that all the time about them. It's like, truly, how do you even get invested on a regular basis as a fan? Again, because they're awesome, and you have awesome players.
Shohei Ohtani. Jordan, what is Ugla? One thing that is weird, notable, bizarre from the week that was?
Not quite about from the week that was, but kind of looking ahead to the All-Star games, what do we say about the All-Star break? Or what do we refer to as the games before the All-Star break?
What do you mean? But that is a very confusing question.
How do we refer to the games that happened before the All-Star? To just all the games that happened before the All-Star break? What do we say? It's the first half.
It's the first half, yeah. But
it's not half.
It's not even close half. It's,
right.
This was the first thing we ever wrote that went viral.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't remember this. No, I don't. Tell me. No, I'm seriously.
In 2013, I wrote a blog post.
Oh, okay. Now I remember, but the way you introed it confused me. But go ahead and explain what you are saying.
I wrote a blog post about how a ton of players were having historic first halves by very tongue-in-cheekly just doubling their first half numbers and saying that, wow, Chris Davis is going to hit 83 home runs because he had however many in the first half. Oh, this player had a 340 batting average in the first half. They're going to finish the year with a 680 batting average.
Yes.
So yes. That was the bit.
Sure, sure. But it made me think, especially. So I was like, okay. Yes, thank you for reminding me of that incredible piece of content. But I was thinking, okay, so something that a couple of people have noticed and I've tweeted about this is that the Padres have played just a ridiculous number of games. They've played, I think they've still played 6 or 7 more games than, let's see. So the Padres through Thursday have played 96 games. I guess it's the gap has shrunk. There's a few teams that have only played 92. But with 3 more games this weekend, the Padres are going to play 99 games before the All-Star break. And my ugly this week was, is that, how significant is that? And the answer is pretty significant. It is tied for the 4th most ever played before the All-Star break. And almost all of them happened, really 2nd, because almost all the ones before were in 1973 for some reason when the Braves played 103 games before the All-Star break. But that is, again, it's just funny to me that we, no matter what, we still call it the first half. And the Padres, it will not be even close to half. They have a ton of off days coming up after the break. So more breaks ahead for San Diego.
I found this post.
Okay.
This is freaking nails. First half stat, Chris Davis, 37 home runs. We'll finish the year with 74 home runs. Math involved. Multiply by 2. James Loney, first half stat, 96 games played. We'll finish the year with 192 games played.
Right.
Math involved. 96 plus 96 equals 192. Miguel Cabrera, first half stat, 365 batting average. We'll finish the year with 730.
And this is why, the reason why we were doing it that year is because in 2013, the All-Star game was very late. And so to that point, yes, like the Orioles played, or the Red Sox played 97 games that year before the break. So.
Everyone was like, wow, Chris Davis has 37 home runs at the All-Star break, right? It's like, well, yeah, he played more games.
So anyway, that's my ugly. What's your ugly?
My ugly is J.D. Scholten. Who is J.D. Scholten? He is an Iowa lawmaker. He ran for Congress, I believe, at one point, and he did not win. But if you go to his Wikipedia page, I'm just going to read this. James Dennis Scholten is an American paralegal politician and current professional baseball pitcher.
Current
for the Sioux City.
Paralegal and current professional baseball pitcher.
Get you a guy who can do both. For the Sioux City Explorers of the American Association of Professional Baseball. That is in Indie Ball League. He is from the state of Iowa and is a member of the Iowa House of Representatives for District 1. He was the Democratic nominee for the Iowa's 4th congressional district in the 2018 and 2020 elections. So he is currently in the House of, he is currently a representative in the Iowa House of Representatives right now. And he, last week, was an emergency starter for the Sioux City Explorers of the American Association of Professional Baseball and was phenomenal. J.D. Scholten played at Iowa in college. He played some indie ball after that for the Saskatoon Legends and the Sioux City Explorers. He's actually from Sioux City, I believe, originally. And just hopping back out there at age 44 and getting outs, baby.
Yeah. I believe he played at Nebraska.
Did I say?
You said I played at Iowa.
Sorry,
from
he played
Iowa.
At Nebraska. He played with yes. Alex Gordon at Nebraska, yes. I believe.
So there you go. What's Alex Gordon? Was Alex Gordon? What would Alex Gordon do if he showed up to this league and, you know, got a bunch of at-bats? Probably not as effective. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know how good shape Alex Gordon is in right now. I mean, he hasn't played in the big leagues since 2020.
Let me be clear. Okay, this is a league with like big leaguers in it.
Oh yeah, this is not some rinky-dink operation. The American Association is one of the two biggest independent league, you know, that we have.
Narciso Crook, Brian O'Grady is in this league.
Oh,
Shed
God.
Long is in this league. Oh. Travis Swaggerty, who was the 10th overall pick in 2018, is in this league. That's kind of sad.
But
Dylan Thomas, who was up with the Mariners, John Nagowski, Blake Rutherford. Okay, there are big leaguers in this league, and a 44-year-old member of the Iowa House of Representatives is out here carving. He pitched again last night, 6 innings and 1 earned run.
But that's the problem, is it's like either this is like all-time J.D. Scholten heroics, but he's also making everybody look bad. Like, he is bringing down the
legitimacy
reputation of the league. That is unfortunate. That is unfortunate. But go JD, go.
First start, 6 2/3, 7 hits, 2 earned runs, only 2 punch outs because he, again, is 44. Probably not throwing very hard. And then last night,
he's just gritting his way through it, man.
Against the Fargo Moorhead Redhawks, 6 innings, 1 run, struck out 3. He is now 2-0. His baseball reference page is unbelievable.
Because he played in the Netherlands last year, and then he played for this same Sioux City team in 2007. So God bless him. We wish him the best of luck. I don't know how Iowa Congress feels about this.
Hey, as long as he's
in his way,
as long as he's making laws on the side, that's fine.
That is outstanding. We hope he continues on and pitches for the rest of the season. That was pretty ugly.
That is the
definition of ugly.
Pretty ugly.
Normally, Jake, we look ahead to the weekend and we look at the games that happen. However, we have mentioned this on the show before, but the regular season games that happen the final weekend before the All-Star game, because we are covering the Futures game, because we're covering the draft, this is the least Major League Baseball we watch like the whole season. So I'm looking at these series and I'm like, oh, that looks interesting. It's not going to happen. Like something will break through and I'll be like, oh, interesting. But I won't be watching it. So I'm not going to pretend to even preview it.
The one thing I'll watch a little bit of is the Orioles and the Yankees are playing and they both kind of suck right now.
Yeah, that's a good one. That is definitely a good one. But other than that, we hope everyone has a wonderful weekend. We will be back on Monday in this same studio after the first round of the draft, before the Home Run Derby. We'll be previewing the Home Run Derby now that we have the full Home Run Derby field announced. So we'll do all that stuff, an All-Star Game preview on Monday. But we hope everyone has a good weekend. We hope your team drafts someone that you are excited to root for. You can email us at baseballbarbecast@gmail.com. Shouts out to producer Andrew Hart's in the room with us. Any final thoughts?
You know who's not draft eligible? JD Scholten, because he's 44.
Yeah, no longer. You could just sign him. You know, why waste a pick on him?
Orioles could use him. Yeah, they need pitching help.
Why are we wasting one of our draft picks on him? Go sign JD Scholten. Maybe he gets picked up over the weekend. Thank you all for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.